everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Indie Corner Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got an awesome guest. Do you want to be Jay Horton or your full name?
We can go with Jay.
Okay, Jay Horton. Jay Horton, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you doing?
Good, good. So Jay's been and he's done lots of movies, and I've interviewed him in the past before too. So this time I really want to talk a lot about the indie scene, which you have a whole YouTube channel based around that, and that's awesome. How did you get started doing indie help, on YouTube?
Well, honestly, I started the YouTube channel about a year before I started the YouTube channel. I had transitioned into making independent documentaries, and I was looking for a way to help promote those. And somebody suggested that I would be good doing YouTube videos. He said, make them about filmmaking, but then you can, promote your documentaries or whatever. And I was like, maybe. And, it just kept rattling around in my head. And then about 6 months later, I was listening to one of Alex Ferrari's podcasts.
Oh, God, I love him. He's really good.
Oh, no, he's great. He's great. And I remember thinking, man, I really wish there had been something like this when I was starting out for filmmakers, somebody talking about ultra low budget movies. And, Alex does a really good job with it, but, he's grown. He's kind of moving past that. He's interviewing more known directors. And I was like, I really would like to see someone really just focus on low budget and focusing on the marketing and distribution side. So I decided, I'll try it. So I did a couple of videos, and honestly, the first couple, I was just I was just thinking, this is just a thing to help push my other work. But as I started getting feedback on those videos, very positive feedback from other filmmakers that were, grateful for the information, I was like, man, it feels really good to help other people. It feels really good to do something, getting something out of doing something that someone else is getting something out of.
Right.
And I was like, wow, I don't know. It just felt really good. So, at first I was just doing one video a week. A month later, I decided to do two. I ended up upping that to three for a while. And what I found, I never had any desire to be in front of the camera or anything like that, But as I was doing it, I was like, not to pat myself on the back or be egocentric, but I was like, I'm pretty good at this. Mm-hmm. It felt good. And, it wasn't like my numbers were astronomical or anything, but I was growing pretty fast, at least faster than what most people said I would, Right. And then, 6 months later, I'm monetized. And, my CPM is a lot higher than a lot of other people. So it feels good to be good at something and to give back to the community.
Exactly. And I love that. I watch your shows all the time. I'm subscribed, Indie Film Cafe, I believe, is subscribed to your stuff. And we really enjoy watching you talk about this stuff, because this is the stuff that indie filmmakers especially need right now. You tackle some really hard stuff what to expect from distributors, what should we expect from distributors in the future, or things like that. That I mean, that sounds like it's just one thing, but there's a mini you go into writing indie films and other stuff, and it really helps when people see that stuff, because I go to YouTube to learn about whatever I want to do, and the stuff I do are reviews and everything, or interviews and stuff. And that's what I like. Yeah. I don't try to be somebody who tells people how to do this stuff or whatever, like you do, because I leave it to people like you to handle that, and I just stick with what I like. And it seems like that's what you like. You like to kind of help be sort of an indie teacher, in a way.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I like, I don't consider myself to be a guru or an expert or anything. I'm just somebody, you know, I've been making movies for about 20 years now. I've directed like 20 something features. You know, I've produced over 50. I've, you know, edited a bunch. So, and I've done a lot of it on my own. So, and I've, you know, even when I go with traditional distribution or with larger distributors, like it's always through deals that I've made. So like I, you know, I've made my own way from, you know, from the bottom, from the very bottom. I mean, you know, I'm from a trailer park in Indiana, you know, no money, no connections, no nothing. Mm-hmm. And I just came out and started making movies, made my own way. And I just would like other filmmakers to know that like there's not just the one way into making movies. You know, it's not just, you know, like you make one movie and you get into a film festival and somebody picks up your movie and, you know, you get famous and make million-dollar movies. There's other paths that, you know, there's a working man method into making movies, and you don't need any of those connections. You don't need to get lucky. You just have to persevere and keep doing it. And you know, I'm living proof of that. I'm not the best filmmaker in the world, but I'm able to make movies, make a living off them, you know, have people enjoy them, and you know, anybody else can do it.
Exactly. What I love hearing these Facebook groups that, and I'm sure you're a part of them, that the film Facebook groups where the people are asking questions like, how do I get my movie into Netflix, or how do I do this or whatever? Like basically they want like a get rich quick scheme. And it's not that simple. Like, I think you've talked about this on one of your videos, but getting into Netflix, you have to know people, you know, you have to have connections to Netflix in order to basically get, and it's very hard for indies to like, you know, cause it used to be Netflix used to have, I remember it where I could stream in the beginning of the streaming days, could stream indie films and yeah. stuff. And almost everything on their library was able to stream, it seemed. And now they're very particular about which ones they stream or have on their DVD, you know, thing where you can buy or rent the DVDs themselves, which I don't even know. I know maybe like one person that does that still, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I know one or two.
Yeah, but like yeah. that's it. Like there's really not that many people just stream. I mean, it's cost efficient to just stream the films instead of like renting them or whatever, you know, and people seem to dig it. So it's really funny to, you know, kind of get these questions about how do you get into Netflix, because that's kind of like asking, you know, how do you get into Carnegie Hall, you know, or whatever.
Practice.
Right.
Right.
You
yeah.
know,
and well, and the thing about the Netflix thing too, because you know, everybody talks about Netflix a lot, or working with Netflix, getting into Netflix, have Netflix pick you up. Unless Netflix is actually producing your movie, like, you know, like paying you to make it, Netflix doesn't even pay very much. You know, right. like, I mean, I'm sure there are exceptions to this, but in general, it, you know, they're very picky about indies, but if they do pick up an indie, the license agreement on it for, you know, it's, you know, whatever, 6 months or a year, whatever it is most likely much lower than what you'd get if you would just, you know, retain the rights and go streaming on, you know, like Tubi or Amazon or something like that. Mm-hmm. That it's really not going to be this thing that's going to break you open that people think it is. They think it's get on Netflix, and that's it's just like in the old days they would say, you know, get into Sundance or, you know, some big film festival, and that's going to make you, and it's not.
Well, I mean, I always tell people, if you want to go, you know, go submit your film to Sundance, right?
Yeah.
And submit it to it, and you're most likely, unless you're kind of a well-known indie film or something, like you have like cast members of people, like, because this is not 1993 anymore. This is not Clerks getting into Sundance. You know, if Clerks were made today, like a movie like that were made today or similar, you know, and that kind of thing, it's just a changed market, you know? So those movies with no stars behind it, very like seldom ever get into like the big, you know, film festivals. But it's always great to have those rejection letters from those things, I feel like, because like it shows, if you get like a whole bunch of them from all these different things, shows that you're working hard on submitting your projects. You care about your project because you're paying whatever the entry fee is to get your project in there. And whether or not it makes it, you at least tried, you know, you did your best on it. So I think that's amazing. And, you know, I feel like people should submit to every film festival that they can, regardless of whether they think they'll actually get into it or not.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, like I said, it's funny. You ever heard of speaking of Kevin Smith, but have you ever heard of a movie called Vulgar?
Yeah.
That Kevin produced. Did you ever watch it?
I never did.
So on the, on the DVD, they don't have a Blu-ray out of it or anything, which I'm hoping they one day release, but Lionsgate would have to put that out. They have a bonus feature that is all the rejection letters they got from every single like film festival that, because I think Toronto Film Festival was the one that accepted them, and then they got the they got Lionsgate, you know,
right.
But they had Sundance rejected it. Slam Dance rejected it, you know, Cannes, you know, all these different places, and every rejection letter, some of them were hilarious. And some of them were just like, hey, I'm sorry. We're kind of full. We can't, you know, put your movie out there, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm surprised that I don't know if they would not get rejected from Trauma Dance. I'm pretty sure, but you know, especially with the movie like Vulgar, which is, I mean, lives up to the title.
Right.
But, I mean, I still think you just should. I mean, what are your opinions on that? Do you think people should just submit their,
I don't think it hurts. I'm personally not a big fan of film festivals just in general. I didn't like them as a fan. I don't like them as a filmmaker. It's just a personal thing.
Yeah, but can you expound on that?
There's something, I don't know. There's just something about the atmosphere that I never liked. I at least in my experience, it felt competitive. You know, and I'm really anti-film as competition. So I didn't really like that aspect of it. And then in addition, you know, I made my first movie in 2003, and I just looked up distributors and went to market. You know, like I've never used a film festival to sell a movie or promote a movie. And now I know people that have and have been successful with it. And I'm not saying, you know, anything bad about them. I'm just saying for me personally, I don't really like them.
No, I get it. I get it. And if you don't want to, you know, kind of feel like competitive against other filmmakers and everything, I get it. However, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, when you submit to any kind of contest or festival or something, there's the competition and stuff. And one of the coolest things I just did was I submitted to a do you know who Stage 32 is?
Yeah
I submitted to their comedy script, TV show script thing. But oh, cool. The coolest thing about it was I didn't get it. Like, we didn't win anything. We didn't even get into like semi quarterfinals or whatever, but we did get coverage, right? They said for like an extra $80 or so you can get coverage for your, you know, for your script. And I thought, okay, you know, worst comes to worst, it, you know, at least I get some notes on it, you know. And it was the best thing ever, like best notes I've ever gotten. And I loved it because it was a real person from, I don't know what, I forgot who it was exactly, but the person who had done stuff was part of a studio thing, you know, and could actually give me some serious, you know, thoughts on why it needed help. And so that's going to help me when I rewrite it, you know, to fix it. You know what I mean? So I feel like sometimes those things can be good if they offer other services and other things too. So Stage 32, you know, we're not sponsored by them or anything. You know, not yet, at least, you know, maybe after they hear this interview. But to go back to your stuff, so your show's been doing really well. Have you gotten a lot of feedback from other indie filmmakers as far as, like, you know, positive feedback saying how much they really enjoy it and how much it really helps?
I get dozens of emails every day. I get, you know, comments on the videos. People Facebook message me or catch up with me on Instagram. But yeah, I get a lot of I've gotten, I'd say 99% positive feedback on it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm guessing you sort of enjoy that, you know, aspect of being able to help other people and let people know.
One thing that's really cool about YouTube, and, like, you know, I still make regular movies, you know, I put out almost one a month, and I still love that. But there's an instant gratification thing with YouTube. You know, it's like, you know, I shoot a video, I put the video up 2 hours later, and then you get your comments and your likes and your shares and feedback. It's like, it's more instantaneous. You know, mm-hmm. like if you do a movie, you know, even as quick as I make them, you know, it doesn't come out for another, you know, 2 or 3 months, you know, mm-hmm. and I made it, you know, whatever. So, you know, there's like a 6 month gap between when you do it and when you get any kind of feedback on it. And the feedback tends to trickle in slower on features. But, you know, like on something like YouTube, you put it up and it's, you know, instant. So there's that instant gratification part of it, which, you know, I admit I like.
It's a little bit of a high right there, right?
Like, it is. Yeah, it is.
Know, when you're looking at the stuff and you're like, oh, man, people are really responding to this one, you know. Have you had to, like, change things up because you realized, like, certain things weren't working on the YouTube?
Yes. Like, you know, for example, you know, I was watching and I didn't really have any kind of opening or like catchphrase or anything like that when I first started. And, whenever I do anything, I research the crap out of it. So I watched all the YouTube growth videos, you know, the Nick Nimmons and Catherine Manning and Roberto Blake. And anyway, one of them was talking about the catchphrase thing. So, you know, I'm Jay Horton. I make movies that make money. This is how. And, you know, I probably went through 7 or 8 iterations of that before I landed on it, you know, mm-hmm. just something that worked and didn't feel too cheeseball. I initially wasn't doing, you know, any kind of like B-roll whatsoever. And for the most part, I still don't on my regular one-on-one videos, but I'm starting to add that more. Like, and then other than that, not really. I've started doing more live streams. I initially didn't do any live streams. Now I try to do one once a month. I'm not particularly comfortable with them. So it's difficult for me.
Well, I've noticed recently the live videos, if you have a certain amount of, like, subscribers, I forgot how many it is exactly, but if you have a certain amount of subscribers, they can actually tip you, I guess.
Yes.
Live videos and stuff.
Yeah,
and
super chat. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, cause I watch, you know, I do a lot of I love Marvel. So mm-hmm. there's a guy named the Cosmic Wonder who I watch all the time on YouTube. My YouTube knows, you know, it mm-hmm. knows the people I like, so put them up, you know, or yeah. whatever. And I get really excited when his stuff comes up, but I'll see his super, you know, his chats and his super chats, and I'm just like, wow, like, people just pay, like, him, like, $5, give him, like, $5 tip, and he'll, like, you know, read their message, you know. But anybody else normally doesn't really get, like, you know, that much attention, which, I mean, when you have that many followers and so many people are writing, you know, there's only so much you can, you know what I mean? Like, the only highlighted ones are the ones you're able to really check out. So I get it.
Well, like for me, because I'm monetized, so, like, I can do the super chats and I get them. But, you know, like, when I do a live stream, because I don't have an astronomical number of followers, I'm a little under 3,000 right now. You know, but, you know, I built that up in a year. You know, I had 200 a year ago, and, you know, now I have 3,000. But like I said, it's not that many. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know if it's the kind of the specific content that I'm putting out, or, you know, my personality or whatever it is. But like I mentioned earlier, like I have a higher CPM than most people have. I think it's because it's so specific what I'm doing. They know how to target the commercials better for the viewers. But anyway, so like when I do a live stream, you know, I have, you know, I want to say somewhere around like tops around 50, 55 people watching at any one time, mm-hmm. you know, so it's not that many, you know, and like comment wise, it's pretty easy to keep up with. I see each and every comment, but I still get super chats, you know, and I think it's just directly proportional to the value you're giving the person, you know, as opposed to, you know, numbers. Like having a large amount of subscribers. Like I know people with, you know, triple, quadruple my subscriber count that make a fraction of what I do.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, like, and you put out so much content per week, you know, like, or whatever, like per month you have a ton. So I feel like, I mean, is it hard for you? Because like for me, when we do our stuff like this, right, this interview mm-hmm. is actually not going to go up for like another month, you know,
right.
It's going to go up in June. So we've already got that like banked, and we'll have a bunch of them already in mm-hmm. the, you know, banked for it. Is that kind of how you do everything? Is do you do a bunch of videos and then sort of
yes.
release them at a certain time and yep. everything?
Yeah. When I first started, I was doing them, you know, shoot one, put it up, shoot one, put it up. But even from the very beginning, I was being really consistent about how many videos I put up a week. Because one of the things I read that they, you know, that almost everybody concurred, they were like, regardless of how many you decide to do, just be consistent about it. If you're putting out one video a week, put that one video a week out every week, same time, same day, put it out. You know, or if you're doing two a week, same time, same day, so on and so forth. So I was doing that from the very beginning. You know, I would shoot on like Friday. You know, I'd edit it on Saturday, and then I'd put it up on Sunday, and then I'd do the same thing Monday, Tuesday, and put another one up on Wednesday. And I did that for, I don't know, the first 3 or 4 months. And then I started feeling, I would start getting anxiety about it, because you know how it is creative, you know, like, because I outline my stuff out extensively, what I'm going to talk about. So, you know, the first couple, you know, is like, I have all this stuff I want to talk about. So it's no problem, but I get about 12 videos deep and I'm kind of like, oh, what am I going to talk about this week? And the video has to be up in 48 hours, you know? Right. So I gotta come up with the topic, you know, perform it, edit it, then put it up. And so I started getting anxious about it. So then whenever inspiration would strike, I would just write a bunch of outlines, like 5 or 6, you know, and then I would go on a Saturday and I would just record 6 videos, just, you know, change clothes, change lighting, do it, and then edit all 6 of them like in that week, and then put those 6 up, you know, schedule it out for the month. And then as time went on, I got a little bit better at it and quicker. Now I record like on average once every other month. So like, oh, wow. like day after tomorrow, I have like 12 videos and I'll record all 12. And then, you know, I'll spend 2 or 3 days editing them. And then I'm done till May, you know, nice. or June, sorry. And then if anything strikes me, you know, in between then I'm like, oh, I got to do this topical video. Then I'll just, you know, I'll throw one together. You know, and then on top of that, I'm doing interviews now. So like I'll do the interviews and, you know, I do those, you know, just like this, you know, we're doing them one-on-one. I have probably, I think I have 6 of them like backlogged right now.
Nice.
So, you know, I'm pretty much done with those through June as well. I usually put up one a week, and I'm considering, cause I had been doing long, like 60 minute ones. I'm considering, because, you know, you ask a question, they answer the question, and sometimes, like, you know, they can stand alone. So I'm thinking about, on YouTube anyway, just making those shorter and doing them, like, one interview, one or two questions, 10 minutes, and then, you know, do the next one the next week, and so on and so forth.
You know? Wow.
And then do the long form thing on my podcast.
That's great, actually.
Yeah.
That way it gives more content. Like different content mm-hmm. through a different medium.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. I myself, I mean, that's what I love about doing, you know, both YouTube and podcasting is that, you know, and there's a different audience sometimes for mm-hmm. both. You know, some people like just like listening to podcasts. Some people just like watching YouTube videos. Me, I personally like both. You know, it just depends on where I'm at and how I'm feeling, you know.
Yeah, I tend to listen to podcasts more for like entertainment or to learn about a new subject. But like if I'm doing like a tutorial thing or learning how to do something, I tend to prefer YouTube. I like a visual, you know, even if it's something you can explain with words, I still like, I like the visual. I like to see the person explaining it, but you know, but I like them both.
It was funny because like when I was driving from California to Virginia, I would sometimes put on a podcast because you can't really watch a YouTube video while you're driving.
Right.
You're really supposed to, you know, or whatever. And so I was listening to my podcast and I was listening to a show called Inside of You by Michael Rosenbaum.
Yeah, I listened to it.
Yeah. And, you know, I listened to the podcast version, but there's, you know, the beautiful thing. And that's kind of what, sorry, Michael, I stole this, you know, from you, but that's why I started to have the idea of putting both the podcast and the vidcast. I'm sure he's not the first person to do that, but yeah.
Rogan's been doing it for years.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's other filmmakers. I'm just saying like, I got the idea because I was like, you know, I was like, oh wow, that'd be really cool. Cause I'd never really done that. I'd normally put all the, just the podcast or just the podcast and the vidcast or just the vidcast. So it's really cool to see that. And then I could, if I wanted to rewatch the interview or whatever, I could watch it on my YouTube in my room or something sometime if I'm in the mood. Mm-hmm. So it's a wonderful thing to have both.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there are some people that, like, do you feel like the podcast gets more, you know, people, or do you feel the YouTube channel gets more people, or is it the same?
Well, in my particular case, and I don't think this is true across the board or anything, but I think you're going to do better at whatever you put more into. Okay. You know what I mean? So like, I started doing the filmmaking thing as a YouTube thing, and all of the research that I did about growing it, and, you know, it was all YouTube based. So my strength, I tend to be better at that. So, and then, you know, 3 or 4 months into it, I decided, oh, wait, I could take these things and repurpose them as podcasts. So I started, you know, throwing them up as podcasts, but I haven't dove into the promotion of that as much as I've done the YouTube thing. So, you know, it's not even close right now, but it grows every week, but it's still pretty small as far as the podcast goes.
What's your like, long-term, do you have a long-term goal of what you hope for the YouTube channel?
I mean, at the rate it's growing, you know, I'm hoping to hit 10,000 subscribers by the end of the year. That seems plausible. I don't think it'll ever replace, you know, my filmmaking income, but it's a nice bump. And, you know, I think it will. And I like doing it. And it's one of those things as I get older and slow down and make less movies, it's, you know, it's a little bit easier. So, you know, maybe it's something I'll do more of.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I always love talking to people who are part of like the YouTube community and everything and stuff. Because I love learning about it and everything. Do you have any advice to people just starting out and trying to get their stuff up on YouTube?
Just do it. Especially when you're first starting out, just like put up videos, just make them, shoot them, put them up. And remember, you can always take down old stuff. It's embarrassing. You learn how to do it and listen, follow a couple of people that like have massive followings that talk about growing YouTube channels. I highly recommend Catherine Manning is my favorite by far. Her channel's awesome. She just hit 100,000 subscribers. Roberto Blake is really good. Nick Nemen is really good. I'm sure there's more, but those are the main ones I watch.
Awesome. Thank you so much. So you were talking earlier about your documentaries and your other feature films that you've done. How can people watch some of these?
I mean, you can find most everything I've done is on either Amazon or Tubi TV. You know, if you want to go free on Tubi, just type in either Jason Horton or Jay Horton. Either one, they'll different a bunch of stuff will pop up. You can always look me up on IMDb and track the movies down that way.
Yeah, I'm loving IMDb's new, like, you know, streaming thing at the top, like letting you know where you can find, you know, they used to just do it for
Amazon.
Yeah. And
then I didn't even know that they're doing it for other platforms now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I saw like Netflix and,
oh, that's great. I didn't even know that.
I don't know if I saw Disney Plus yet or not. But I know I saw Netflix. So Netflix has jumped on board. So I'm wondering, and then my movie, Scary Story Slumber Party, I found that on IMDb and that it's on Plex, which is funny because I did not give permission to my distributor. Like, my distributor is supposed to be, you know, gone and everything and stuff. So either Plex just put it out themselves or, you know, or my distributor sent it to them and I'm not getting any money from it. So I'm right. Like, I'm a little frustrated by it, especially since I own the rights back, you know. I'm supposed to have the rights back. So who knows what's going on exactly, but I know I can find it on Plex TV. So, you know, through IMDb. So I love that they're doing that now, you know, honestly, but you know, it's one of those things where it's a kind of a, you know, it's a useful resource, and IMDb has always been a resource, you know, for all films, you know, great or small. So, well, thank you so much, Jay. How can people reach you if they want to come, you know, talk to you or something about anything?
I mean, you can find me on social media at the Jay Horton, Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, Jason Horton, or on my YouTube channel is youtube.com/Jay Horton. You can find me through any of those.
I was gonna say TikTok, you know, are you doing a lot of TikToks?
No, honestly, no. It's one of those I keep hearing about and people saying it's really good for promotion, but it, you know, I haven't quite
gone there yet.
Out. I mean, I've been on it, but I don't know. I feel a little out of touch.
I started getting into it now because of my Echo Lake Universe stuff. So I get it. It's hard. You really have to like dive into it and try to like just learn everything. And the beauty is YouTube will teach you how to do these things or whatever on TikTok.
Yep.
But it's just one of those things where you gotta learn, you know, and stuff, and kind of adapt to what's, you know, kind of what's popular, I guess. And right now TikTok is very popular.
Yeah. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. So for indie filmmakers, I really think it's a good starting ground for promoting your work, and getting your stuff out there. So we're planning to do more. The problem is you're supposed to do like content every day, basically daily for TikTok. We haven't gotten anywhere near that yet. So we're going to start doing some stuff in summer and see how, hopefully we can have it take off a little bit more, but who knows? Yeah. That's the thing with this stuff. You just never know. But once again, thank you so much and hope everybody checks out your work, especially on Tubi and Amazon, and checks out your YouTube channel. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Have a nice night.
You too, man. Bye.